content of this program is meant for educational purposes only, because knowledge is power. However, the controversial subject matter discussed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers.
Welcome, everyone. This is the Power Hour. I'm Alan Myers, sitting in as guest host. I am joined by my two good friends, Douglas V. Gibbs and Brady. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers. It's a pleasure.
This is going to be wonderful. Later on in the show, for the listeners, we're going to let you know who we are. But I have one thing to say, and then we're going to jump into the topics of the day. If you have a question or comment, polite, respectful, of course, you can call us at 844-769-2944 and then press 1. Now, if Doug was going to have to write this down, we'd say the number 844-769-2944. Press 1. Did I get that right, Doug?
You are the...
Hey, you do that to me on your shows.
Oh, yeah.
It's payback. Anyway, the first topic up, we're going to be very, let's say, overall constitutional today. Doug happens to be, yes, Mr. Constitution, scholar extraordinaire. Brady, extremely knowledgeable on many. He's basically a master of many topics. Me, I'm just here to talk. Here we go. I found this article, and it listed 20 comments on various amendments to the Constitution. We're not going to talk about them all, but we are going to talk about a few. Just to give an idea of what is being said, I'm going to make a few comments, then Doug will go, Brady will go. On the next one, Brady will follow me, and then Doug. Here we go. You ready, gentlemen?
Ready.
Born ready.
All right. This one is about the First Amendment, and we're going to address, yes, hate speech. Free speech is essential, but what about hate speech? Revising the First Amendment could protect marginalized groups from discrimination while preserving our right to speak freely. Yes, I did fall off my chair when I read that. Are you kidding me? You're getting to a point where someone is going to be in the position to define, quote unquote, hate speech, which means you don't get to say it. It could be extremely mean and nasty. It could be, I don't like the movie. Well, that's hate speech. You have to stop saying that, or you could get sued. The First Amendment was written specifically about speaking for one particular reason, to allow people to speak freely. Doug, your thoughts?
You know, I came across a comment one time on one of the social media channels. I don't remember which one. And the person said, well, there's a difference between freedom of speech and propaganda. And I'm sure he would say the same thing about hate speech. And first of all, hate speech doesn't exist. There's no such thing, because if you're going to determine something as hate speech, first of all, what that is that's a thought crime. How is it hate speech? Do you know there was hate behind it? How do you know? Oh, well, thought crime. The interesting thing about the First Amendment, there are five rights that are enumerated in that First Amendment, speech being one of them. And most people, the speech is the only one they can remember. first of all, so let's clear that out. The second part that's interesting is it begins with the words, Congress shall make no law. What it means, Congress shall make no law. You notice that there's no asterisk. that says, well, gosh, you know, unless it's hurt someone's feelings or unless it's considered propaganda or unless, you know, certain senator believes that there should be a law against it or certain snowflakes started to melt because it was said. When freedom of speech was put into the First Amendment, in fact, they were targeting, what they were wanting to make sure they protected was religious speech and political speech, the very things they're trying to say, well, that's rude and that's, and, you know, you've lived, you know, your whole life, right? And you've heard, well, you don't talk about religion and politics. No, that's exactly what you need to be talking about. That's why that's the first two things in the First Amendment, religion and political speech. Get back to my point, freedom of speech, there is no question, there is no delineation, there is no asterisk, all free speech, there shall be no federal law against your free speech. Freedom of speech is what makes this country free. Freedom of speech is what liberty is all about. And if I don't agree with your speech, I have a choice. I can debate you or have a civil discourse with you. I can change the channel or I can turn off the radio.
Thank you, Doug. The serious question. If this came through, would I be able to say I hate coconut, or would that be considered hate speech?
It depends on what the coconut identifies as.
Okay. I just wanted to clear that up. Doug, I mean, Brady, what do you think?
You know, there's a great Canadian rapper by the name of Tom McDonald, and one of his lyrics in the song Fake Woke is, hate speech is the speech that you hate. And I think it sums it up pretty well. The part about this sentence that really gets me is they say, well, they want to protect marginalized groups. And when you ever have a debate with these people, ask them to define what a marginalized group is. And if you can actually get them to make a list, it turns out it's pretty much everybody but straight white males, which means they are marginalizing a specific group. That's the hypocrisy of this entire thought process. It is disgusting. And I agree with Doug that there is no asterisk. You can yell fire in a crowded theater. You just can't do it, yeah, especially if there's a fire. The government has no business whatsoever saying what we can or should say, should speak. That is the first step towards totalitarianism. And I'm going to have to vote no on this amendment proposal.
Oh, what a surprise.
Hey, Brady, here's the thing, and this is something the founders understood, is you can cry fire in a theater, but culturally, the culture will take care of it. If that's a no-no, you'll find out from the people.
Yeah, there's an old parable about the boy who cried wolf, I think it's called.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are consequences. And
you don't need government to dictate. Don't worry. The culture will take care of itself.
I'm going to emphasize one thing, then we'll move on to another one. And you brought it up, Doug. The opening line in the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting, and it continues. This is a directive, an order, telling Congress. Remember, Congress is the legislative part of the federal government. The federal government is a creation of the Constitution. It didn't exist before this. And this amendment, despite how well written the Constitution was and is, they hammered this one for home. Congress shall make no law. This is not a direction to states or counties or cities. This is a direction to the federal government. What don't they get about this? So keep in mind, every amendment we talk about today, this is about telling the federal government what it can or cannot do.
And there are exceptions like the 14th Amendment, but yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad you make that point, Alan, because the Bill of Rights was designed to tell the federal government what it could and could not do. It was redundant in many ways if you follow the enumeration doctrine, which already stated the same thing. If we didn't tell the federal government they could do it, they can't. If we didn't tell the states they can't do it, they can. And this borders on the topic of incorporation, which we're going to have to talk about a bit today.
Yeah, I was trying to not talk about because I know it's a long topic, but you know, now that you've thrown the box open, let's remember also in the preamble of the amendments, because and most people don't realize this, that the Bill of Rights has a preamble.
Yeah, in fact,
it says that the Bill of Rights is all about preventing the misconstruction and abuse of the federal government's powers.
Yeah, and coincidentally, most of the online versions of the Constitution you'll find do not include the preamble to the Bill of Rights. Coincidentally, it's got to be a mistake. I mean,
You know it is. Of course,
it's not like they would do anything on purpose.
It's just a whoopsie.
Yeah.
Another First Amendment. Speaking of religion. This one is religious freedom versus public health. Oh, yeah. Balancing beliefs and safety. Let's amend the First Amendment to navigate conflicts like vaccination, ensuring public health measures, respecting individual rights. Okay. You want to respect an individual's rights? Leave it alone, because otherwise you start to get into this gray area, slippery slope, whatever, and it just accelerates, because if the federal government is given the power to do what they're talking about, it will become an endless demand. There's nothing unclear about Congress shall make no law. Leave this alone. Since this is not the federal government's business, go talk to who? Your state, your county, your city. But when it comes to, public health, religious freedom, well, I'm sorry. You have to listen to the experts. Well, I don't like the experts. Brady, your thoughts?
Yeah, the magic word there, of course, is public health, because that term can be interpreted really broadly. You know, basically anything you do could be for the good of the public health, and it's a catch-all phrase to allow the government to do whatever the heck it wants. We saw this during the COVID crisis, and I have air quotes around crisis because I believe it was manufactured to be a much greater deal than it actually was. There's another opportunity for the government, and there were state governments as well as federal government, to seize power they never should have had. Unelected bureaucrats that work in the area of quote-unquote public health were able to have dictatorial patterns or powers, and it really comes down to it. There is no emergency powers clause in the U.S. Constitution. There is no emergency powers clause in most state constitutions, and the ones that do have it need to seriously consider revising it. There was a big gun control issue, I believe it was New Mexico, if I have it right, where the governor was going to try to, the governor was trying
to confiscate firearms in Albuquerque.
Yeah, and she called it because it was a public health emergency. It is a catch-all phrase. It should not be allowed. A lot of the people that fought against that, including the state of Colorado, had one of their gun rights advocacies, went after her on Second Amendment principles, but they really should have been going after what the heck is an emergency power in the first place. This has yet to be addressed. It needs to be addressed in every single state, because we've already seen, I was in California during the COVID crisis, and Gavin Newsom he took down the basketball rims in my local park. They put sand in skateboards. They arrested paddleboarders to protect the Mermaids Union. Yeah, it was ridiculous. They did this all in the name of quote-unquote public health.
Thank you for that, Brady. To add one more, because really, I mean, if you're going to be a kind, caring, loving citizen, you're going to care about public health, which means we're going to have to outlaw all gas-powered engines because it's a public health issue.
It really is a catch-all phrase.
Thank you for pointing that out. Go ahead, Doug.
That's why I don't shop in California for my gas-powered engines anymore, because you can't. But anyway, you know, I was in California at the time during the scamdemic as well, and got thrown out of a lot of stores for not wearing a mask, as a matter of fact. They lost my business forever. The church that I decided to start attending and became my church until I moved out of the state in Temecula Valley, it's called 412 and Pastor Tim Thompson. And the main reason why I decided to start going to that church is because they never shut down. They never closed. And so I'm at one of the services one particular Sunday, not knowing that NBC is setting up outside. And I come out of the church at NBC, and this is NBC Palm Springs, not the LA one, but they shove a mic in my face. Says, how's it feel to be inside a church full of dangerous people not wearing masks? And I said, well, first of all, you mean like the one you're wearing? And she says, well, yeah. And I said, well, what you're wearing, those little blue things don't stop any viruses. They're ineffective. And you're actually posing more of a danger to yourself trying to, you know, inhale all your poisons after you exhale them than you are regarding COVID. I have this feeling that was not aired. But my point is, when talking to my pastor about it, and he told me that they did one Sunday have a parking lot service, and he says to himself afterwards, "What am I doing?" First of all, God's law. We know this is junk. We know it's being, you know, whatever, but exaggerated. But God's law and us coming together as a body is more important there, and that's our choice. Liberty is about choice. And if there is an illness out there and I choose to go into public, that's called liberty. I'm taking that risk individually, personally. What about the other people? Well, they decide to take that risk too. You don't want to take the risk? Stay home. That's what liberty is about, is making choices based on the information provided to you. It is not government's position to dictate, especially when it's it gets back to no asterisk. And how do I know what the founding fathers would think about this? There was a smallpox epidemic during the Revolutionary War. Nobody shut down. Nobody was forced to wear masks. There was no forced vaccinations except for those entering into the military. And it's great what they did. They vaccinated them against smallpox. And then while they were slightly ill fighting, you know, the weakened germ that they had been put into their body, that's when they learned how to shoot. And I'm thinking, that's brilliant. If you can shoot straight while you're sick as a dog, you're going to kick butt out on the battlefield. But that's the only federal Articles of Confederation or under the Declaration rule, Continental Congress that was in place was the military. And that's it. Everything else, it's like, hey, you're sick, don't open your store. You know, let the public make their decisions. It is called liberty. Yeah, but Doug, what about that's my decision. It's my decision on don't ride that skateboard. You might skin your knees. That's my decision. It's funny because we have always prided ourselves as a child. You take a chance. You go for it. You know, if you sit there, I can't remember the name of the cartoon. There was a cartoon movie one time about this little boy who was afraid of everything. He would calculate the statistics of everything. And the whole message of the movie was, you know, you can't live like that. Life is full of risks. I take a risk the moment I step, get behind the wheel of my car. I take a risk the moment I start walking down the sidewalk. I take a risk the moment I go play a sport, whatever. But that's my decision. And as for the Constitution, Brady is exactly right. There is no emergency clause. There is no, in case there's an emergency, there's no asterisk. There's no, well, government can't mess with your liberty unless there's a public emergency. It doesn't say that for a reason. It wasn't a misstep. It wasn't a whoopsie. It wasn't a, oops, we left that out. They did not put those types of clauses there on purpose.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate all of that. Gentlemen, we'll continue. The next one is regarding the Second Amendment. You familiar with the Second Amendment? You heard of it?
Yeah. Matter of fact, even people who don't believe in the Constitution have heard of it.
Right, there we go. Okay. Well, this one is about clarifying gun ownership. Hear me out. The Second Amendment's vague language on gun rights sparks debates. Updating it could balance personal freedoms with public safety, curbing gun violence while respecting individual rights. Okay, this person got my attention right with the vague language. And Doug will check me on the word count. There's 27 words in the Second Amendment. If you want, I'm going to do a little self-promote. I wrote an article about this for the newspaper, The Flame. If you went to my website, fedede.us, and at the top there's a tab for more. Click on more, click on The Flame, and you'll find my article on the Second Amendment. This is, if you just read it, it is absolutely plain and clear what they meant. You just have to understand what the words mean, and what they meant when they wrote it, not what we or some people would want to mean today. The boys are going to get into this. I'll just emphasize this. What's unique about the Second Amendment is there's three common nouns that begin with a capital letter. Using a capital letter on a common noun in a sentence was a way of emphasizing that word. They didn't italicize, underline, or bold. Militia, state, and arms. They had specific meanings back then, and what they meant then is what they mean today. Doug, you got anything to keep in mind, the Second Amendment ends with something very important and powerful. Shall not be infringed. That doesn't sound vague to me. Doug, we got a few minutes more. What do you got?
When you said keep in mind, I thought you were going to say to me, keep in mind this is only a two-hour show.
Well, that too.
Yeah, Second Amendment, where do I get started? When it comes to gun rights and the gun culture in America, they did not write the Second Amendment in case the deer rise up against us. They wrote it specifically for specific reasons. And the language is very clear. What we have are broad interpreters who want it to mean something else. So there is no confusion. It's not broadly written or ambiguous in any way. It is very specific. We have people who with an agenda to destroy your right to keep and bear arms. And so therefore, it's broadly interpreted and it's ambiguous. And I'm going to try to do this as quick as I can. A well-regulated militia is a militia that's in good order. It's well-equipped. It's well-trained, and all of that. And we have two militias. Keep in mind that this is right after the Revolutionary War, where the militia, which was there was no different parts of it, organized or unorganized. The guys of the neighborhood, they were also part of their local militia to protect their community against outside problems, be it invasion or tyranny from within their country. And so a well-regulated militia from a organized militia point of view is one that's in good order, well-trained, well-equipped, and so on and so forth, which in Article 1, Section 8, there's actually a section that speaks to that, Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution, that speaks to that, where it says the Congress shall have the power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia and governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states, respectively, the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. Well-regulated militia, militia that's in good order, but also it points out something else, belongs to the state first, which is also the next part, being necessary to the security of a free state. Security against invaders? No, that's what our military is for. Security against something else, perhaps an internal threat, perhaps federal tyranny. And then the right of the people, that nails, that explains everything. It is the right of the people. George Mason said that the I'm thinking Charles Thompson, who wrote between these guys a lot, but anyway, George Mason said that the militia is the whole of the people, except for a few politicians and or office holders. The right of the people, it is the your individual right. What is a right? This is God given to you to keep and bear arms, to keep, to own, to possess, to bear arms. You look up the 1828 Webster Dictionary. One of the examples for the word bear is to have a gun under one's coat. So to bear arms also includes concealed carry. There's a bunch of states that are getting it right with constitutional carry law. You don't need a permit from the founder's point of view. I have a shirt that says the Second Amendment is my gun permit. But anyway, and then it says shall not be infringed. Pretty definitive. Shall not be infringed. In any way, every single federal gun law is unconstitutional. Every last one of them. Go ahead, Brady. Have fun with it.
Well, you closed with my opening thought, which I appreciate. Doug and I have had this
getting
conversation.
Back to the incorporation, yeah.
Yeah, we've had an ongoing conversation.
Brady, hold on one second, because we're coming to the bottom of the hour break, so I don't want to interrupt you too much. I'm just going to say a couple things, and then when we come back, you can begin. How's that?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. A couple things on what Doug, thank you for that very detailed information. While you were talking about Chuck, I looked up George, and I found and I found his quote. You were pretty close, because he was asked, "Sir, what is the militia?" George Mason answered, "It is the whole people, except for a few public officials." Basically, as you were pointing out, we're talking about we the people are the militia.
Mm-hmm.
And
every last one of us.
And the one thing I like about the Second Amendment, which doesn't get talked about too much, to me, the Second Amendment not only speaks to rights, but it does something others don't. It speaks to duty. Duty to protect the security of a free state, your state. You have a duty as a citizen to protect it. And we're going to make sure, we writers of the Constitution, that you can do that. Nobody talks about the duty. Anyway, we're at the bottom of the break hour. People, listeners, thank you for being here on the Power Hour. We will be back after these important messages.
iComplex CS is a comprehensive natural medicine formula to nourish and heal eye tissue formulated by a board-certified MD ophthalmologist, Dr. Robert Abel. Why you need vitamins for your eyesight? There is a direct and proven physiological connection between the nutrients we put into our body and the quality of our eyesight. Some vitamins for eyesight can be absorbed from the food we eat, but other vital nutrients cannot, especially if you're not eating a daily, nutritionally balanced diet. Additional supplements are essential for optimal eye health as well as your overall physical health. With 23 vitamins and nutrients such as N-acetylcysteine, which is important for removing toxins,
toxic substances from the liver. This, the most complete clinical strength eye and total body multivitamin available in one supplement. Call the Power Mall at 877-817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
With inflation constantly chewing away at the value of paper money, perhaps it's time for Americans to bite back. Ownership of gold and silver coins provides great counterbalance to weaker paper money value. U.S. Coin Capital provides physical gold and silver coins. You can reach us directly at 1-800-878-2646, uscoincapital.com.
For questions or comments about today's broadcast, please feel free to email us at support@thepowerhour.com or call 877-817-9829 and select option number 2. We'd love your show feedback and guest recommendations, so please feel free to reach out and be a part of the Power Hour team.
Hi, this is Linda from the Power Mall. I would like to tell you about a product that I personally take and recommend. I was very drawn to the Bone Active Topical Rub because I want to build healthy bones and prevent age-related bone loss, which so many of my friends have. Bone Active Oil contains three of the most potent mountain herbal oils known to man: sage, rosemary, and oregano. I rub it on my joints and on the bottom of my feet, and an added bonus is that it smells amazing. Not only is it potent by just rubbing it on the body, but also can be taken internally. Take advantage of the research. Use Bone Active Rubbing Oil and capsules to support a healthy overall bone density response. I'd love to talk with you more about this product. Call me at 877-817-9829 or learn more by visiting thepowermall.com.
In these uncertain times, with the threat of electromagnetic pulse, potential fallout from nuclear power plant disruptions, as well as direct exposure from electromagnetic frequencies from your home's smart meter and electrical circuitry, your life has become radioactive in more ways than one. That's why North American Urban Spice created Nuke Protect, which supports the thyroid and your adrenals with natural potassium iodide. With premium-sourced selenium and antioxidant support more potent than blueberries, Nuke Protect supports immune health with a blend of wild oregano, rosemary, cumin, Atlantic-sourced kelp, raw chaga powder, and wild rose coriaria. Nuke Protect is even safe for pets. You and your loved ones need to get prepared for this sad eventuality and stock at least 4 bottles of Nuke Protect for every member of your family. Get Nuke Protect today at thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We are back. The Power Hour with Alan, Doug, and Brady. Thanks for being with us. Keep in mind, for those who might have a question or a comment, polite and respectful, of course, 844-769-2944, and then press 1. We're back. When we left Brady coming back to comment on what we were talking about regarding the Second Amendment, and then Brady wants to switch back to a First Amendment one. But
well, you left him hanging with his gun still holstered.
Yeah, but the safety was off, so it's okay.
I've got good trigger discipline. You don't have to worry about it, people.
Brady, lock and load.
Well, Doug closed out with one of the really important statements. He said all federal gun laws are unconstitutional. That is the case. I'm 100% agreement. The question brings up, does that mean state gun laws are unconstitutional? No, they are not. There is a reason that every single state, now with the exception of California, has gun control language in their own state constitutions. They weren't doing it to be redundant. They were doing it because they knew the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states. This gets controversial because there's people that would agree with us 99% of things constitutionally, but they think they are Second Amendment absolutists. And I bring this up because they make the argument that, yeah, it's that the Second Amendment is what keeps the federal government from becoming tyrannical and taking away all our rights. Well, yeah, that's part of it. But there's another part of the Constitution that protects us against the federal government, and that's called your state government. When you start incorporating the Bill of Rights to mean that it tells the states what they can and can't do, you've completely kneecapped the state's ability to stand up for your rights. So, yes, your right to bear arms helps protect against a tyrannical government, but so does your state. There was one of the founding fathers who might have written, and he might have been the guy who wrote most of it, the Constitution. What was his name? Jim Madison? James. In the book, The Oath and the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents by Corey Bretschneider, fantastic book, he's talking about Madison, and he says, he considered his work crafting the Constitution so thorough that there was nothing to amend. Article 1 limited the powers of Congress, and Article 2 constrained the president. A Bill of Rights was redundant at best and dangerous at worst. And when you start talking about misapplying any of the Bill of Rights, but particularly the Second Amendment, that's exactly what he was referring to. Another one of the founders, one of my favorites, what was his name? Patrick Henry, says, this is an exact quote, "The Constitution is not an instrument for the government to restrain the people. It is an instrument for the people to restrain the government, lest it come to dominate our lives and interests." I think that's probably one of my favorite Patrick Henry quotes. And we are seeing it live out in real time today.
And, you know, it's interesting, as you mentioned, that California is the only state constitution doesn't have any gun language. You said gun control language, but I know what you meant, gun language. And it's funny because it originally did, and I don't know why that language slowly was diminished or gotten rid of, but that is a key, as you were pointing out, a key part of this incorporation theory. If the Second Amendment was incorporated to the states, then the states would not have worried about having that language in their state constitution. Now, that said, and I wanted to bring this to Alan's attention in case he didn't notice, as we have a caller. I don't know if you want to grab that caller now or while we're still in Second Amendment, because it's probably calling about Second Amendment, or if you want to hang on a sec.
Okay.
Eric in Missouri is the caller.
Yeah, it was on the First Amendment, on freedom of speech. Now, how does that apply to this new law? Didn't they pass a law that was against the law to be anti-Semitic? And I don't even think they defined what that was in the law.
Yeah, step one to taking away your right to free speech. Now, while I don't agree with anti-Semitic speech, that is their freedom of speech. If you we're going to have freedom of speech that agrees with you, then you've got to welcome freedom of speech that doesn't agree with you. That's how it works. I tell people all the time, with those jerks out there that keep protesting with this horrible language, it's because of this First Amendment that they're complaining about, that they have the right to do. Well, they have that right because God gave it to them, but in America it's recognized as right because of that First Amendment.
So then is that law unconstitutional? They just passed?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely it is.
Okay.
Yeah, it says Congress shall make. Congress shall make no law respecting. The five different categories. It says they shall make no law. If they make a law when they're not allowed to, by definition, it's unconstitutional.
Okay, well, that's what I was thinking. But like I say, they didn't even define what anti-Semitism was in the law. I think they referenced some statement out of the country, a different website somewhere. But okay, I agree with you on that. Thanks.
Yeah, they rarely define things because it's hard to broadly interpret something if they define it.
To me, thank you, caller. To me, one of the benefits of being inaccurate, incomplete, undefined is, we're going to broadly interpret this new law. Well, help me out, gentlemen, because you know the Constitution so much better than I do. Where in the Constitution does it give any branch, any entity, the authority to broadly interpret the Constitution?
Well, according to Alexander Hamilton, who I'm not a fan of, the General Welfare Clause. Now, that said, when arguing about it and creating this implied powers idea, at the time, Secretary of the Treasury, Alexander Hamilton, is explaining how, you could broadly interpret based on this idea of implied powers. And when Jefferson began to argue against, he says, you need to be able to read between the lines. And Jefferson responded, I did, and all I saw was blank space.
The attack on the Constitution had begun.
Yeah, I mean, and we're talking within, a year of it going into effect. So people ask me all the time, when did the attacks against Constitution and when did unconstitutional stuff begin to happen? I said, before the ink was dry, unfortunately.
Yeah, General Brady. General welfare sounds a lot to me like public health.
Yeah, exactly. Really, well, and general welfare is not a clause to make a law. It's the way they intended. If you read it carefully and you read Madison's notes and his veto of the bonus bill in 1817, it was meant to be a condition that's met if the federal government's doing its job. In other words, you're doing your job, there will be general welfare, a general sense of all is well. It's not, but this idea that it creates broad interpretation and implied powers because basically Congress can pass any law if it's for the common good. That's basically what they're saying general welfare means. That's not what was intended. And if you look at these proposals coming from Congress today, it's aside from maybe the Commerce Clause, it's the most used clause in the Constitution as an excuse, constitutional excuse, to propose a law. And this anti-Semitism one, I bet you, I haven't looked at it, but I bet you their reasoning was general welfare.
The thing about this idea of general welfare, which is, wait a minute, we're writing this Constitution to absolutely, totally limit the federal government. Article 1, Section 8. We're going to tell this new little entity called the federal or general government, this is all you get to do. And we, the states, are telling you what we can do.
And the only way you can add something is if you propose an amendment. And the states have to approve that with 3/4 vote.
Right. So somehow they had this attitude and then they go, we're just going to completely ignore everything we just said by giving you the general welfare clause. It's absolutely silly. Brady, you had your, pun intended, you had your shot at the Second Amendment. You wanted to go back to one of the First Amendment items. Take it.
All right. This is a First Amendment proposal called campaign finance reform. And this proposal says, money talks, but should it dominate our politics? Revising the First Amendment can curb corporate influence in elections, promoting fair representation and governance. Now, before I criticize the living heck out of this, I'm going to say I absolutely agree with the spirit behind this. We have got some serious issues with our campaign finance laws. But correct me if I'm wrong, but the First Amendment doesn't say the darn thing about money, does it? I don't see it. I'm reading it right now, and it doesn't even mention money. The Supreme Court
has... Money's not mentioned in the Constitution at all, as a matter of fact.
Well, somewhere in
the article. Except for the Treasury, Department of Treasury, that's it.
Yeah, Congress has the right to mint coin, but you know,
what I'm talking about is like controlling economics, things like that.
Wait a minute. Maybe the problem is we're not broadly interpreting the First Amendment. So let me go through the five things. Establishment of a religion. No, that, okay. Prohibiting free exercise of that. Abridging freedom of speech. That doesn't sound like money. The press. Peacefully assemble. Petition the government for redress of grievances. So which one of those could be broadly interpreted to include money?
I have absolutely no idea, but apparently the Supreme Court disagrees with our common sense analysis of that. In Citizens United, they ruled that corporations are people and they can spend all the money. I mean, it's ridiculous. What's funny is if you take a poll of voters from the far right to the far left, almost everybody would like to limit special interest ability to donate to political causes. But it's not a First Amendment issue whatsoever. It's a campaign finance issue. George Washington, in his farewell address, talked about the danger of factions, what we now call political parties. Yet he also said there's nothing, we've got the right to assemble. We do have First Amendment rights to create parties. It's created a really tribalist system in our country that's, basically threatened to tear the country apart. Because people, you have the vote blue no matter who people, and you've got, people that are going to vote Republican, vote red till you're dead. That's not local representation. That is not self-determination. That is two national political parties, I'd like to say 1.5 national political parties running the country for their own benefits. But there is something we could do about this. Political parties are going to exist. There are going to be factions. What we can do is to limit the campaign finance issue is I propose an amendment. Doug and I have talked about this a bit. You want to prove that corporations aren't people? Fine, let's do this. Only registered voters can contribute to a political campaign. That limit that you just got rid of every super PAC, all of that with what that one part of the amendment. The second thing I would propose is political campaigns or political contributions cannot cross state or county lines, depending on what the race is. People in Georgia don't need Hollywood money determining, buying advertising space to determine who's going to be their state senator. That's just not the way it's supposed to be. That is the opposite of local representation. So you put an amendment together with those two things, and the current campaign finance laws are breached all the time. We see the scandal going on with Act Blue, but let's give an enforcement mechanism. Put something in place so that this stuff isn't even allowed to be attempted. Keep the campaign finance in your own state. And I think you solve this stuff altogether, but it needs to be a brand new amendment. It is most certainly not a First Amendment issue.
Well, that would keep California money, for example, going to an Atlanta race, a Georgia race, or to a West Virginia race or something like that. Another thing that would also, I think, stabilize our problem when it comes to money in political money in the system is to get back to the original intent of the Electoral College. When you got the electors voting for the president, the people and the state legislatures appointing the electors, what that does is that eliminates the influence of the democracy part of the vote, and it gets us back to that Republican mechanism, and it mitigates the power of the money, I think, quite a bit.
Yeah, I'd like to – not only would I want to preserve the Electoral College or get back to what it was, I'd like to see it expanded to just about every office we elect.
Well, gentlemen, hold those thoughts because we're going to touch on that a little bit later in the program.
Okay.
But thank you. But I have a couple of questions for Brady. First of all, are you sure that corporations do not have a pulse?
I'm quite sure. I actually have a few corporations. And none of them can breathe, eat, or do any of the things a person could do. So, yes, I'm quite confident that that is the case.
So are you saying that somehow the Supreme Court made a mistake by saying corporations are people?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I didn't know they were allowed to make mistakes. Once again,
That gets into what corporations are, though. They're limited liability. They're their own little entities, their own little separate little people. Don't you love that kind of stuff, Brady? Sorry, I had to open up that Pandora's box. Sorry. Yeah,
the noise you just heard was the lid on a can of worms just popping off.
Yeah, well, as long as the worms stay in the can for a minute, we're fine.
I think it's too late.
We've spent a lot of time on that, which has been fun, but I have some other serious topics I want to get to. I want to talk about one more thing in the wackadoodle news area, and then we're going to move into our big topics. And that is, and I think it happened yesterday. This is for our listeners. You guys know this stuff. The national debt exceeded $35 trillion. Now, for those who are not familiar with the number 1 trillion, write a 1 down and then follow it with 12 zeros. That's 1 trillion. Now, I'm a CPA, forensic accountant. I'm a numbers guy, but I don't really process 1 trillion. I also know that a trillion is 1,000 billion. Once again, I don't process that very well. Which meant I had to figure out a way to talk about 1 trillion in what I call understandable units. And I decided to use the spreadsheet, and I calculated 1 trillion in seconds, inches, and miles. Just to give you an idea of the absolute magnitude of 1 trillion. Not 35. 1 trillion seconds. If you could live 1 trillion seconds, you would live to be about 31,709 years old. Now, Brady, is that going to happen?
Probably not.
Okay, good. Next, you want to exercise. You want to get out there. You want to walk a trillion inches. Doug, if you were to walk 1 trillion inches, you'd have to walk a distance equal to 633 times around the Earth at the equator. Is that going to happen?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
For a number of reasons, but your reason is one of them, yeah.
Yeah. And finally, can't do the seconds, can't do the inches, going to do the miles. I want to be the first one on my block to get that trillion-mile frequent flyer card. All I have to do is fly a distance equal to 107 round trips from Earth to Pluto and back, and I got a trillion miles.
That's how many trillion. Trips to Pluto and back?
107.
107.
And that's with Pluto at its far distance, not its near distance.
Yeah, and how long does it take to get there with current technology? Yeah, it takes a while. Let's just say
more than a trillion seconds. Yeah. The point to this information is that our national debt is at $35 trillion. Do the multiplication, you get an idea of how absolutely monstrous this absolutely totally unpayable national debt is. And what do they do in D.C.? They keep figuring out how to try to borrow more in order to spend more. This is why we've got to get our federal government back to its constitutional roots and limitations, because it is completely rogue. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen?
Yeah, all we got to do is print more money into existence, right?
Yeah, that's for another show.
Yeah, no.
Go ahead.
The thing is, and it is interesting, you know what we did before the Federal Reserve when we needed money? We went to the U.S. Treasury where we stored it.
There you go.
We didn't borrow it. We're borrowing it to use our own money. Think about that for a second.
That's not quite correct, but that's for another show where we can.
Well, in the long run, basic all the way down to for the layman's mind, that's essentially what happens. And thing is, we didn't have to borrow it before there was a Federal Reserve. But we did borrow it before because you have the First Bank of the United States and the Second Bank of the United States, which were the brainchildren of our good friend Alexander Hamilton again, who broadly interpreted the Constitution in order to get those things in play. Because He argued, well, you know, money is gold and silver, and all the gold and silver is in Europe, and we need to be connected to Europe, because if we're connected to their banking system somehow, then we'll be okay.
Yeah, you have to establish debt. You have to go into debt to establish your credit is one of his.
That was another one. Yeah, matter of fact, he believed that perpetual debt was a good thing.
Another reason why I don't like Hamilton. Forget the rap for a minute.
Anything else on that?
Yeah, you know, from a conceptual standpoint, you know, we keep each successive generation keeps leaving this massive unpayable debt to the following generations, and that is a crime.
Hey, Brady, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're less than 1 minute out, and I have to do this one announcement for the program. Keep that thought, and when we come back. Listeners, please consider that the Power Hour is a 100% listen-supported platform. That means without your support, we won't exist. Consider supporting the Power Hour by ordering at thepowermall.com or making a donation. To make a donation or order by phone, here's the number, 877-817-9829. That wasn't too fast for Doug, but I'll say it again, 877-817-9829. You've been listening to the Power Hour. We'll be back after these important messages at the top of the hour.
Harmful organisms are everywhere affecting your health and well-being. Fortunately, there's a solution. Paratrax is a unique formula designed to help create an environment that's hostile to invading organisms. Made with a blend of herbs and other natural ingredients such as wormwood, which has often been used in traditional medicine as a dewormer. If unwanted organisms are affecting your health, Paratrax can help bring it all back in balance. Order today from thepowermill.com or call 877-817-9829. Are you tired of trying to figure out how to get all your fruits and vegetables into your busy lifestyle? OptiVita Complete Essentials provides you with 22 whole food vitamins and minerals, 29 fruits and vegetables, probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for ultimate health and nutrition. 30 individual packs, now less than $3 per day. Get your OptiVita Complete Essentials by calling 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour is brought to you by thepowermall.com. Supercharge your life with only the best health, wellness, and readiness products. By choosing to purchase from us, you're directly supporting independent news media. Support small business and buy from the good guys.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I have a good friend with me here today. She has been taking the calcium bentonite clay that she purchased from the Power Mall for many, many years now. And I asked her to sit with me and explain to the listeners what she uses the clay for.
Thanks. So just to let you know, we use it on a daily basis. I will put a teaspoon of calcium bentonite clay into a glass of water and drink it before bed for detox. We've done weekly foot soaks for my husband who has diabetes. We use it for facials. I use it once a week for my clay bath detox. We've used it on spider bites, insect bites, and I've also used it for the swelling in my ankle after surgery.
Oh, yes, I do remember when you had the surgery. To order the clay, please call 877-817-9829 or go to thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour is an independent radio show. We are funded by people who appreciate our work, not by ads or algorithms. Your support is key to the continuation of this broadcast. To show your support so that we can continue to bring you unbiased information that is now more vital than ever, please visit thepowerhour.com and click Support Us. You can also place a donation by phone by calling 877-817-9829. We thank you for any amount of support that you're able to give.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.